Hello and welcome to Health Matters. I am your host and radio health evangelist, Dr. Tony Weaver. This is the Salute to Carl Castle show. This is a man I've followed his career ever since he was doing the news updates on Morning Report. I'm a tremendous fan of the late, great Carl Castle and thought we ought to pause for a moment just to pay tribute. Thanks to our listeners at True Talk Internet Radio and here to mourn his passing, but also to give you some health information from the University of Kentucky Physician Assistant Program, Assistant Professor Shelley Irving. Hi, Shelley.
Hello.
And here to explain to you how, even in Carl's absence, you can get information off the Internet about our show and from our show, from the University of Kentucky, Executive Director of Networking and Infrastructure, Rick Phillips. Hey, Rick.
I like the way you put "and infrastructure" on there this time. You kind of gave it some nice emphasis there. That was really nice what you did.
Listen, you will have your Director of Networking. Sure.
Let me ask you this. Do you have any idea what the "and infrastructure" means? So, Tony, that means glass because that's what we make fiber out of.
Oh, I see. So the man who spins the glass.
Well, no, that's not really true either. I really, you know, in truth be known, I don't really do that. I don't do any of this.
Okay.
Remember, I'm just the guy who takes all the credit.
Yeah, all right. So a guy from UK, Rick Phillips. Hey, Rick.
Hey, Tony. You know you can get the audio of the show at WMKY.org. That's right. Morehead State Public Radio's website. There you'll find all the audio of the shows once you figure out how to get to it through from the menus of the website. You can download it. You can listen to it over and over and over. Again, that is how you listen to Health Matters. If you have to interact, if you just want to interact, if you just need to interact, facebook.com/HM Radio Show. That is the fan page on Facebook for Health Matters. And so you can go there. You can interact with the team. You'll see some stuff posted there that's sometimes it's relevant to show topics. Sometimes it's relevant to just the time of the year or the day. Sometimes there's just some interesting tidbits that come across somebody's desk. But you can certainly interact with the Health Matters crew by going to facebook.com/HM Radio Show.
Our sponsor for today's show, Pap smears. Get them when you need them, but not when you don't. We had from the American Academy of Family Physicians, the journal is called American Family Physician, and the April 1st issue, they had an update on cervical cancer screening. It's been a while since it's been on the show. I thought we would go over their top 8 scientifically based recommendations on cervical cancer screening on pap smears and other methods of screening. So number one here, to take right off, cervical cancer screening in women before age 21 years old leads to more harms than benefits and does not reduce cervical cancer incidence or mortality. So there is no reason for a person who has no symptoms to get a pap smear done before age 21. If you have symptoms, we should look. But if you don't have symptoms, no reason to get a pap smear before age 21. Fun fact number 2, average risk women 21 to 29 years of age should be screened every 3 years. If your pap smear is negative, you get a repeat in 3 years. And they call it cytology alone. That's just to get the pap smear every 3 years, ages 21 to 29. And then number 3, we'll stop there because we don't want to overload you with information. Average risk women 30 to 65 years old should be screened either every 3 years with a pap smear or every 5 years with a combination of a pap smear and HPV testing. Remember, human papillomavirus, the HPV virus, is the virus that causes cervical cancer. So if you test for the virus and get the pap smear, you can do that every 5 years. If you get the pap smear alone, you can do it every 3 years. Average risk women, no symptoms, ages 30 to 65. That's what they are recommending. Now, all 3 of those recommendations, don't do it below 21 if you have no symptoms and you're average risk. 21 to 29, every 3 years, a pap smear. And then 30 to 65, 3 years, every 3 years, a pap smear, or every 5 years, a pap smear plus HPV testing. Those are, they're called evidence rating A. That is, this is really pretty solidly proven by the scientific research that this is the way to go. Notice that there are no recommendations here saying that women should get a pap smear every year. I know that has been the custom in this country for a long time, but in fact, it is a custom that needs to change. And so that is our sponsor, pap smears. Get them when you need them, not when you don't.
Can I ask a question about that? Probably not.
Well, you just shut it, Shelley. No, go ahead.
Do those guidelines change if someone has had the HPV vaccine?
If you've received the HPV vaccine, American College of Surgeons, a whole bunch of different expert groups say follow the guidelines, follow the recommendations. U.S. Preventive Services Task Force, follow the recommendations. Everybody's saying even if you had the HPV vaccine, and one of the problems is we really haven't had enough time to digest this, but as for now, yes. But I'll add, if you had a hysterectomy and it wasn't for cancer, screening should be stopped. Everyone agrees. If you had a hysterectomy, not for cancer, stop getting pap smears. Stop getting pap smears. If you had a hysterectomy and it was for cancer, then continue screening for an additional 20 years and then stop, just to be sure that you got it all, because this is a slow-growing cancer with a tendency to come back a little bit late. But if you had a hysterectomy, stop it. If you had the HPV vaccine, I had to look it up because I didn't prepare that ahead of time, and this is not my area of expertise, but the guidelines, according to the American Family Physician, these guidelines say no. And pretty much every expert group says, even if you had the vaccine, same thing as general public. Carl Castle died April 17th, age 84. He did the news breaks for many years during Morning Edition, got up early and did that. Died of complications of Alzheimer's disease, supposedly. Was born in Goldsboro, North Carolina, back in 1934. And he was the guy, if you can imagine, the guy who was born to be a radio show personality. He hosted a music show on his grandmother's wind-up Victrola, doing fake commercials between the 78s. Before he even started school. So this was a guy whose career was absolutely set. Went to North Carolina. Andy Griffith came through North Carolina doing some teaching and ran into him and said, you should be in TV. And he said, no, I want to be in radio. Went to North Carolina Chapel Hill and actually met another student named Charles Kuralt. Is this not the coolest thing? That would be like Michael Jordan and LeBron James just happening to hook up in a summer camp and play some basketball. That's how star-studded this class was. And they actually started their own radio station, Ralt and Carl Castle, which I think is extremely cool. Did some disc jockeying, and after discharge, did military service. After he graduated, did military service, and after discharge, wound up working for NPR. And this is one of those odd things. You know, most comedians get serious as they get older.
They do. Yeah. And they become better actors.
Yeah, Tom Hanks, mm-hmm. more serious parts mm-hmm. as he got older.
Robin Williams as he was.
Robin Williams. And so a lot of actors will.
You know the one that hasn't?
Leslie Nielsen.
Yes.
Well, he didn't try.
He went backwards.
But Martin Short.
Martin Short has
he
been.
He never really did the serious thing.
He's been funny all his life. But I don't know about Gene Wilder. He stayed
Will
funny.
Will Smith
as he got
tried
older.
To do comedy at first, and then
yeah,
he's okay.
Yeah, he was.
He's not
right.
Terrible.
Yeah, I would agree. But Leslie Nielsen is a notable exception of a person who did serious acting as when he was younger, and as he got older,
how
he was,
you have to
the
be
thing
to
was
know that, it's serious acting.
Well, the thing is, if you remember those Police Squad movies with Leslie Nielsen, he would he sounded dead serious. And he made it sound important. He would say something absolutely ridiculous. So at any rate, that's what happened to Castle when he got involved with the Wait, Don't Tell Me crew. But he had some of that. I saw this. This is vintage Carl Castle. He was doing a press conference, and someone asked, what time do you get up to do the news for Morning Edition? And he said, 1:05 a.m. And remember, the audience said, why 1:05? And he said, because 1 o'clock is just too damn early. And so you realize the guy's got a sense of humor.
What'd you just say?
Didn't
we have an argument before the show about that particular word?
I am quoting a legendary radio man.
So the question is, did the audience hear a beep?
That will be up to our producer.
And if I don't hear a beep, you and I are going to have a tough conversation next week.
I am quoting the legendary Carl Castle. But at any rate, our salute to him. We will miss him. We will miss his presence. We'll miss him on our answering machines across the United States as a prize for Wait, Don't Tell Me winners. And we will miss his humor and his presence. Now, Rick has not Rick is not aware of this, but Shelly and I talked about it before him. This was, I found this in, there was a Los Angeles Times article about liquid nitrogen. Now, Dippin' Dots ice cream is made by freezing ice cream or freezing whatever they freeze in liquid nitrogen.
What, I think it's ice cream, Tony.
Yeah, and it comes out
I believe it's ice cream.
Cold.
Right.
Oh, okay. Well, you can put...
Well, it's just like negative 30 degrees or
right.
something
you
like
can
that.
Put,
I mean, it's not super cold.
But you can put anything in liquid nitrogen. And now what you can do is you can take breakfast cereal or whatever, you drop it into liquid nitrogen and you freeze it, and then you get a bowl of cereal with smoke coming off of it. And if you eat a spoonful of cereal, you can blow smoke out by, you know,
reverse vaping.
Yeah, it's sort of reverse vaping. And, gee, isn't that funny and fun? And it's like those...
Sounds dangerous.
Well, doesn't it, though? There is a case report, 13-year-old boy in Korea. He was at a fair amusement park, and he got some of this, what do they call it, dragon's breath, and ate it, but he swallowed some liquid nitrogen.
Ouch.
Now, yeah, medically we use liquid nitrogen to burn off warts. We freeze warts off of people. And so he got that stuff into his stomach. The other thing is when liquid nitrogen thaws out, it expands to 700 times its size. So he gets this stuff in his stomach, and it burns a hole in his stomach and immediately expands. His stomach essentially explodes. So he is eating this stuff, gets liquid nitrogen in his stomach, immediately severe abdominal pain, collapses. They take him to the hospital. The x-rays show a stomach full of air, and they open him up immediately. There is food all over his abdominal cavity. He has a big hole in his stomach. They sew it up. He's in the intensive care unit. He stays in the hospital 8 days, and he leaves with a massive scar in his stomach from eating liquid nitrogen frozen, from swallowing liquid nitrogen. Dippin' Dots. If you don't have liquid nitrogen, you're fine. There was another case in 2013 of a woman who drank an alcoholic beverage that they fogged it up with liquid nitrogen, and part of it was liquid nitrogen. So this apparently this is fun food here if your food has got a fog around it or smokes.
This does not sound fun at all.
It turned out poorly for him, yes.
Yeah, this is not good.
Yeah. So Shelly and I had a conversation. What characteristics of food make you worry? And I would say, if there is smoke coming off your food, bad news.
Yeah, if it glows
if it
in
glows.
The dark.
Now, you actually had some food that had that property.
Yeah, some suckers where the sticks glowed in the dark. I brought them back from Ecuador for my son to share with his scout group. And so they decided to play radiation tag, whatever that is, with that, because that's what boys do with things that glow in the dark.
We're going to take a break and let you think about what you won't eat. Hopefully you'll swallow our second portion, because we're going to come back with that after the break. You're listening to Health Matters on Moorhead State Public Radio.
Hello and welcome back. This is the second fractional portion of Health Matters. I'm Rick Phillips.
I'm Shelley Irving.
I'm Dr. Tony Weaver. This is our salute to Carl Castle, the late great NPR news and
he wouldn't have forgot to say show.
Infotainment. Yeah, they mentioned, you know, he did some really bad imitations, and he said that was part of the joke, who is Carl now, he would quote somebody, and he would take a woman's voice very badly. But you're right, he was very good, where I am not. I am right now just basically floundering, and Carl Castle would never do that.
Tony, I think you are the best Health Matters host we have. I honestly believe
in
that.
A pinch.
I honestly believe you are the absolute best that money can buy. That the money we have can buy.
Yeah, it's an absolute bargain. Our sponsor, the second time, Pap Smears. Get them when you need them, not when you don't. Reminding you of our first 3 points, which these are Class A rated evidence, and these are pretty ironclad. That is, if you are of average risk, if you have no symptoms, you should not have a Pap Smear before age 21. It does not protect your health. It does not pick up cancers. Cervical cancer is a slower growing cancer. It is not a cancer of teenagers, although it is a cancer of young women. So it is important to get started, but not before age 21, according to the experts who do this, including the U.S. Preventative Services Task Force. Second one, which we remind you last time, if you're 21 to 29, every 3 years with a Pap smear alone. From 30 to 65, every 3 years with a Pap smear alone, or every 5 years if you do a Pap smear and you get an HPV test. Now we're up to number four. Number four, and this is kind of consensus, but not as strongly supported by evidence, cervical cancer screening, pap smears, should be discontinued if you're over age 65 and your screens have always been negative. Now, the thing about it is this is a very slow-growing cancer. You probably will not be exposed to HPV after age 65 if you weren't before age 65. Again, those are some suppositions. HPV is transmitted sexually. So if you are sexually active with multiple partners in your 60s, then, yeah, you probably need to continue getting pap smears. But the consensus is it's very rare for a person to have negative screens up to age 65, at least in previous generations with previous morals and without Viagra and stuff like that that help old people to be sexually active. You didn't need it. And that right now is they call it a grade C level recommendation. After age 65, you can stop. But if you continue to be sexually active with multiple partners or a new partner, then you might consider continuing pap smears after age 65. Fun fact number five, annual cervical cancer screening is not recommended for average risk women of any age. Annual, yearly pap smears are not recommended for average risk women at any point in their life. Number six, women with a hysterectomy unrelated to cancer should not be screened for cervical cancer. Number seven, if you've had a hysterectomy related to cancer, screen for the 20 years after the hysterectomy. And then number eight, HPV testing may be considered for cervical cancer screening every 3 years in women 25 and older. Primary HPV testing instead of a pap smear could be considered. Now, the neat thing about it is if you absolutely hate pap smears and absolutely it is painful to you, you can't get a pap smear, we do have another option. Kind of, again, we're learning, we're advancing, life is getting better and better. As our sponsor, cervical cancer screening, pap smears, get them when you need them, but not when you don't. Now, this was kind of interesting. This was the London Daily Mail, which I occasionally look at, and they said no more paracetamol, which is basically Tylenol. No more Tylenol. Tylenol has been banned in the United Kingdom. Well, that's not exactly true. That's a little bit of hyperbole. But what the National Health Service did is they said, look, we're not going to use government-funded health care to pay for certain conditions that, frankly, people ought to be able to take care of out of their own pocket. So there are 35 of them. I'm going to roar through them, and we'll stop. I'll tell you what, I'll go 10, and you tell me which one interests you.
How many of them are pharmaceuticals in nature?
Just a few, actually.
I mean, isn't that the best way to do it is make something over-the-counter?
Right.
Well, that essentially eliminates it from...
Right. Now, they even over-the-counter stuff the National Health Service used to pay for, and now they've said, no, we're not paying for that anymore. You're going to have to buy that out of pocket.
You get your own aspirin, your own ibuprofen.
Right. First one, probiotics. Buy them yourself. Number two, vitamins and minerals. Not going to pay for those anymore. Number three, anything to treat an acute sore throat. So if you have a sore throat and you need some mouthwash or you're going to get some sore throat drops or something to ease the sore throat, pay for it. We're not paying for it. Infrequent cold sores. Now, if you have very frequent cold sores, you may need to use an antiviral medicine. But if you just get a cold sore when you every once in a while, nope, not going to pay for that. Conjunctivitis, eye infections, not going to pay for that. It's mild, it's self-limited, no reason to treat it. Coughs and colds and nasal congestion. You're on your own. We're not going to pay. Cradle cap, that's the rash on infants, goes away on its own. You can get some stuff to make it go away faster, but you have to pay for that. Hemorrhoids, they're not paying for hemorrhoids. You want hemorrhoid cream, you're on your own. Infant colic.
Well, I guess that's okay, right?
It's yeah, you can counter, do it. Right? I would, surgery for hemorrhoids, I suspect the National Health Service would pay for that. But they're not going to pay for Preparation H. You're going to have to just go buy that. And I thought,
but obviously, if you go to the physician about your hemorrhoids, they're obviously still going to pay that.
Right. They're just not going to pay for the treatments that right. you would purchase
the home
on your own.
The over-the-counter
treatments. Yep. All right. Keeping going. Infant colic and mild bladder infections. Nope, not paying. Mild, they call it irritant dermatitis. You get these little skin rashes because something irritates your skin. Dandruff is number 12. You're going to have to pay for your own dandruff stuff.
Is there any other way to treat dandruff besides head and shoulders? I mean, all my life, I've only heard of one way to do that. Now, I've been blessed. I don't have that condition, but
maybe.
Wait, no, hang on a second. No, hang on a second. Yeah, I'm wearing a black shirt.
Yeah, Rick's wearing a black shirt, and he's pretty, I got to say, that's a pretty solid, he would make a good after dandruff commercial right now. because I don't see a fleck anywhere. So
no.
What we need is someone to run their fingers through his hair, and Brian, our producer, has volunteered to do that, and we'll make a commercial.
So we're going to take a longer break than normal.
Yeah. Diarrhea is another thing. Dry eyes. Sorry,
no, wait. They don't pay for diarrhea?
They don't pay for diarrhea medicine.
Okay.
Pepto-Bismol. They don't pay for Pepto-Bismol.
Okay.
Dry eyes or tired eyes. Earwax. Nope. Not paying for the earwax stuff. Excessive sweating. Sorry about that, but no. And that, by the way, that excessive sweating can be major. I mean, it can be very significant.
And the deodorants are expensive.
Yeah. Now, the ingredients they've got are not cheap. On the other hand, I think that they're probably talking about over-the-counter stuff, and I could see that. Head lice, oh, they're awful. You've got to treat them, but you're going to do it on your own dime. Indigestion and heartburn. Boy, there's a lot of money in the U.S. spent on indigestion and heartburn treatments.
But they're obviously, again, going after the over-the-counter.
Right. Yeah, if you need an endoscopy to check and see if you've got something wrong with your esophagus, fine. I'm sure they would pay for that.
This whole article should have over-the-counter in the title, right?
Right. Constipation, migraine, insect bites, mild acne, mild dry skin, sunburn, sun protection. Nope, not paying. Mild to moderate hay fever or seasonal rhinitis, minor burns, aches and pains and headaches and back pain and things like that. Again, minor. Nappy rash, that's the British term for diaper rash. Oral thrush, which is an infection of your mouth. Prevention of dental caries. Yep, if you wanted to get some type of toothpaste or mouthwash, you're on your own. Athlete's foot, mild toothache or teething pain. Pinworms, travel sickness, and warts, all of that. The National Health Service spends 22.8 million pounds a year on constipation. That can fund about 900 community nurses, 3 million pounds a year on athlete's foot, 2.1 million on diarrhea. That would pay for 2,912 cataract operations if you are keeping score. This is not a good use of our limited resources, says the National Health Service Clinical Commissioner, Dr. Graham Jackson. So these are then, according to the experts at the National Health Service in the United Kingdom, these are the things that you should be able to manage on your own. And it's a mixed bag from a medical standpoint. I've certainly been consulted for the management of many of those conditions. Had a person come to the emergency room for a sunburn. Not a severe sunburn, but a sunburn.
How'd you treat that?
Sent him home. I mean, honestly, the skin was red. It would probably blister and peel. You can use solar cane or something like that. But
for temporary relief.
Yeah, or you can just keep the skin moist. And either way, it's going to blister and peel.
So you basically gave them a prescription to go to the city pool, stay hydrated.
Well, no, because they probably got the sunburn at the city pool if it wasn't a tanny bit. So I don't want them to go back. I just thought, you should stay out of the sun. That's the number one thing you'd say. But went to the emergency room for a sunburn, and unfortunately. All right, next up, and these are very, this segment, this is not theoretical advances in medicine. No, this is the basic stuff. The title of this article in Healthline on April 11th was, how many times a day should a person pee?
You're just going for all the words today.
You're saying pee is a curse word.
Well, it was.
Pee is a swear word.
When I was raising my kids, they had some interesting words that they thought were bad words, and that could have been one of them.
Okay. We apologize to those Health Matters listeners who are offended by us using the word pee.
We typically don't talk about peeing in public.
I know.
I don't think we're talking about peeing in public right now. I'm not sure where the article's going.
It depends on where you put the comma there, okay? I mean, there's a comma there somewhere.
Okay, fair enough. According to Healthline, many people wonder how often they should pee while no set number is considered normal. And that's absolutely true. There is no set number. The more you drink, the more you pee. If you haven't learned this in your life so far, you haven't been paying attention.
I know that's true to be factual, but you know, when I was in the military, we drank quite a bit, but we still only had opportunity. I mean, everybody's always talked about a military bladder, right?
Yeah.
I mean, you don't have the opportunity to go as much, and thus, so you tend to go less. So I wouldn't necessarily say the more you drink, the more you go. In that sense,
I'm going to say that's a good general rule. Now, if you are sweating a lot and you are rehydrating, then there's no excess fluid to get rid of. If you are sitting at your desk with a water bottle, chugging it on a regular basis to so-called stay hydrated.
You're going to have a lot of steps.
Yeah, and so you're looking at six or seven times a day. We'll get to that in a third fractional portion about getting away from your desk. But right now, they mention age and bladder size also matter. So your bladder makes the matter. Medical community use the term urinary frequency if you pee more than that many times. Most people pee 6 or 7 times every 24 hours. 4 and 10 times daily may be considered healthy if it doesn't interfere with your quality of life. Well, I would say even if it does. I mean, frankly, for some people, peeing once every 24 hours is very annoying. I have certainly had circumstances, and virtually any healthcare provider or anyone that's really got a job that they can't pull away from has had circumstances where they really needed to pee, but they couldn't. But that's a separate issue, we'll do an editorial comment on that later on about how annoying it is to have to pee. But at any rate, 6 or 7 times every 24 hours, maybe 4 to 10 times would be a range. Depends on your age, obviously your bladder size, obviously fluid intake, no matter what Rick says, and other conditions. Diabetes, the high sugar makes you pee more. If you have a bladder infection, it makes you pee more. Caffeine makes you pee more. So even if you have the same amount of fluid, as a matter of fact, there was this ridiculous idea that if you drank caffeinated beverages, they would make you dehydrated because it made you pee more than the fluid that went in. It doesn't. It's not the best way to rehydrate, but it doesn't make you dehydrated. That caffeine's not that powerful. And the other thing is some medications used for blood pressure have we call it a diuretic effect, where they will take fluid off. If you drink 64 ounces of fluid in 24 hours, you will pee approximately 7 times. Now, there is an experiment that our Health Matters listeners could carry out at home.
Mm-hmm.
64 ounces of fluid in 24 hours, 7 times. That's what they said. Pregnancy, all bets are off.
Yes.
Can't speak from experience.
Yeah, I have heard that. Now, if you have back pain, blood in your urine, cloudy or discolored urine, difficulty in passing urine, fever, leaking between visits, pain when urinating, strong smelling urine, and I think strong smelling urine may be oversold because, again, if it's really concentrated, it's going to smell strong. But all those other things, that could be a sign of a kidney stone, a kidney infection, or another problem. And so at that point, you'd see a doctor. As far as if you pee more than you think you should, Shelley, you can take it from here because I am very unimpressed with the medicines that treat overactive bladder. I think the side effects are vastly underestimated, and the effectiveness of those medicines at treating overactive bladder. If they help you, then that's fine, and you should take them. But I am very unimpressed with those medications.
Yeah, I agree. I'm not satisfied with them either, and don't recommend them, actually, to most patients.
I would much rather you drink a little bit less, not to force your bladder. And if you have frequent small amounts, then that may be your only option. The other thing they mention that will be really good for you to do is to walk a lot and to do, they call them Kegel exercises, to try to control the muscles that close off your bladder. But I will tell you that particular problem of peeing frequently is not, the medications we have are certainly not the best. So, to continue on with our This Is Not the Most Amazingly Theoretical segment in Health Matters history, Shelley showed me this, and I found it, and I put it on the air. Dirty Dozen, the Environmental Working Group, a nonprofit organization focused on human health and the environment, issues their Dirty Dozen report every year. The produce with the most pesticides on it. And they mentioned number one strawberries. Single sample of strawberries had 20 different pesticides on it.
Yep, that's 3 years in a row for strawberries.
You keep up with these things.
It's 3 years in a row.
Okay.
Why strawberries? Is there something special about strawberries? They're so close to the ground, they attract bugs more? I mean,
I think they're close to the ground. The other thing is, if you think about strawberries, they're very hard to get clean.
All the little seeds on the outside of them.
Yeah. That strawberry is a tough thing to wash. So they're going to have they're going to have germs, but they're also going
to
have.
So you're saying that all the other stuff has the same pesticides? It's just easy to clean it off.
I don't know that.
Because it sounds to me like what you said was they use more pesticides on those crops.
A single sample had 20 different. And you think, my gosh, you know, it's this is like going through a car wash or something. You know, now you're doing the undercoat and then you do the, I don't know. That was a lot. Number two was spinach. Three, nectarines. Four is apples. And apples, they're pretty easy to wash off. But there are a lot of things that eat apples. As a apple orchard owner, I can tell you there are insects. There's actually a line outside my orchard waiting to get in and eat my apples. That's how many things eat apples. Grapes is number five, peaches number six, cherries number seven, pears number eight, tomatoes number nine, celery number 10, potatoes.
Fruit?
Well, it's, what is it? Fruits and vegetables. I don't think, well, potatoes. I just say potatoes.
How does the pesticide go down in the ground?
Rain.
Okay, yeah. So that's
or,
what it is.
Just, I mean, the other thing is, yeah, okay.
Can't there be some more things above ground that are higher on that list?
Well, it's number 11 out of 12. Sweet bell peppers are number 12. Rick, I don't...
It's a subsurface
I told you, there
vegetable.
Is no theory here. It's not like we're sitting here. I can't do any mathematical calculations, and I can't, you know, it's not like I can point...
Does that, but doesn't it seem like which one of these things is not like the other? I mean,
yeah, potatoes, you know. Rob. Well, let me tell you, the clean 15 and the 50 seconds I got left here, avocados number one, the clean... And this is... I don't like avocados. And that I know that makes me a
and
bad person.
And that's why
person.
I love you.
Yeah, but I don't like avocados. They're number one. Number two, sweet corn. Three, pineapple. Nothing wants pineapple, apparently. Four is cabbage, and that doesn't make any sense
at
all.
You got to cut the pineapple out.
I know, but cabbage is clean, and potatoes are dirty. It makes no sense. Five is onions. What eats onions? Nothing I want to be associated with. Six is frozen sweet peas. I don't know why. Seven, papaya. Eight, asparagus. Nine, mangoes. 10, eggplant. 11, honeydew melon. 12, kiwi. 13, cantaloupe. 14, cauliflower. And 15, broccoli. Watermelon, not on the clean list, not on the dirty list.
Even
where are the watermelons?
Even the insects don't want to eat the broccoli.
We got to go. Stay tuned for our third and final fractional portion. You're listening to Health Matters on Moorhead State Public Radio.
Hello and welcome back. This is the third and final fractional portion of Health Matters. I'm Rick Phillips.
I'm Shelley Irving.
Dr. Tony Weaver, this is the salute to Carl Castle
show. Salute!
Ah, you're pulling out a
Hayride. Or the
Hee-haw.
Hee-haw. Absolutely.
Okay.
Come on, my grandmother made me watch that when I was a kid. You know, that's something, that's a show that no 10-year-old boy wants to watch. Right? Right?
Well, I like the jokes. I'm sorry, the jokes were about my speed.
That was
when
a pretty
was
good
age.
Joke in itself there, Tony.
Yeah. So, yep. At any rate,
move
we
on.
Are saluting Carl Castle, the late, great NPR news announcer turned comedian at the end of his life. He did, apparently, he had an interest in magic. The obituary mentions he did saw Nina Totenberg in half as a part of a magic trick. As well as deliver the news and imitate everyone from Monica Lewinsky all the way to Donald Trump. So he will be missed. His presence will be missed. Our sponsor for the final time, Pap Smears. Get them when you need them, not when you don't. Let's run these eight recommendations from the American Family Physician. This is a magazine of the American Academy of Family Physicians. This was April 1st, and they have eight recommendations that are evidence-based. That is, the scientific evidence supports these to varying extents that are recommended. Number one, a Pap Smear before age 21 in an average-risk woman who doesn't have symptoms. This is a screening Pap smear. More harms than benefits. Does not reduce cancer incidence or mortality. Number two, age 21 to 29 years, screen with Pap smear alone every 3 years. Number three, when you're 30 to 65 years old, screen every 3 years with Pap smear alone or every 5 years with a combination of Pap smear and HPV testing. Number four, screening should be discontinued in women older than 65 if they have had negative results in the past. And that, as we said, is an iffy recommendation. Depending on their lifestyle, we may need to continue screening. But if they have been negative and they are monogamous and they're sexually abstinent, they're 65 years old, they can stop. Number five, annual, yearly Pap smears, not recommended for average risk women at any point in their lifetime.
You're welcome for that, by the way.
Yeah, it's every 3 years. It is not every year, and thank you for making me read it.
You know that old saying about leading a horse to water?
Number six, women with a hysterectomy unrelated to cancer, don't screen them. There is no benefit to screening if you've had a hysterectomy and it was not for cancer. Number seven, women with a hysterectomy who had cancer 20 years after cancer and then stopped because at that point it's very unlikely that you're going to pick up anything. And number eight, primary HPV testing considered for cervical cancer screening every 3 years in women ages 25 years or older. That is, it may be that that will take the place of the pap smear, the every 3 year pap smear, and you just go with the HPV. You can do them both every 5 years, or when you, you're 30 to 65, or if you're over age 25, you might even consider just doing the HPV and skipping the pap smear altogether. Again, the whole nature of cervical cancer is changing dramatically. If you got these vaccinations, your risk of cervical cancer, we believe, is going to be much, much lower. And so this is a thing in evolution. But we're very excited about the fact that, first of all, the annual pap smear just needs to go away. It's painful. It's awkward. It is unnecessary and unhelpful. And so that is the bottom line take-home message of our sponsor, pap smears. Get them when you need them, not when you don't. We've been talking about beverage taxes, sugar-sweetened beverage taxes. We've mentioned this on several shows. And here is another article looking at the impacts of the Philadelphia beverage tax. Took effect January 1st, 2017. So we now have a year's worth of data, and we can analyze that. In Berkeley, California, they did it in 2015. In Mexico, in 2014. The Berkeley tax, which was a penny an ounce, dropped the sugar-sweetened beverage consumption by 21% within less than 6 months. The Mexican tax, 1 peso per liter, 10% higher cost, dropped it in the year following implementation. They don't mention the percentage. The Philadelphia tax was a higher tax. Rather than a penny, it was a penny and a half per ounce, which should, for any drink that has more than, you could get exemption if you had more than 50% milk or you were a 100% fruit drink, you got an exemption. Anything other than that, sugar sweetened, you had to pay the tax. If the retailers fully pass the tax on to consumers, it would increase the beverage price for sugar sweetened beverages by around 20%. So they watched to see what would happen, and the results are pretty darn staggering. The consumption of regular sugar-sweetened soda dropped 40%. The consumption of energy drinks dropped 64%. The consumption of bottled water went up 58%.
That's exactly what we would want to see happen.
Right. And I think the energy drinks, because they are consumed by younger people, maybe people on a more limited income, didn't have the flexibility, they dropped the most. But the soda dropped, sugar-sweetened soda is 40% lower, bottled water 58% higher. It was exactly what you would hope would happen if you were doing this.
So again, for the audience's benefit, and maybe mine, does this include diet drinks?
No.
So where's the statistic on that? Do they stay the same? They should have been a control. They should have been used in the research study as a control.
Maybe, but if you really, really like cola, you might just switch over from a sugar to an unsugar. So they might even go up. You know, I mean, when you block the consumption of one beverage, you would tend to increase by tax and would increase.
Well, the question is, how many people who drank Coke then switched to Diet Coke just because
right.
It was cheaper?
Yeah, and I have no idea. It was
but
not part
I'm
of the
I'm just saying
report.
they should have done some research on that.
Yeah, they have. The United Kingdom, they looked at not only that, but also at alcoholic beverages to see if they went up. And, in fact, they did in some cases.
Well, that's an interesting case. You know. So, Tony, what if you had something like a Cuba Libre, where it was a rum and Coke? That's a rum and Coke.
Okay.
So I wonder if the actual drink itself with the bar actually had to be increased because there was a tax on the Coke.
The answer is yes.
That's interesting.
And so it would be, I assume, passed on. The bar drink would be higher as well. The thing about these drinks that we found, one is the amount of sugar in these drinks is staggering. And I will point out that Shelley made the mistake, and she has gotten me back on this.
I did.
But I pointed out, so I'm going to get ahead again. I pointed out she drank a Mountain Dew, a regular Mountain Dew, a sugar sweet Mountain Dew. And we were looking at the label on this thing, and it was a wonder that it didn't explode and blast sugar all over the studio. That's how much sugar was in that drink.
I should have needed a spoon.
Yeah, to drink the drink with the amount of sugar it had. So she has now moved to a Dasani sparkling berry water.
It's fizzy.
It's fizzy?
It's fizzy.
I don't understand it's sparkling. What is sparkling the same as fizzy?
Well, it has the same effect as fizzy anyway.
Well, I think, you know, sometimes if in the sunlight, water can sparkle pretty much. You could have sparkling water just if you shook it.
No, this is fizzy.
Okay, it's fizzy water. But at any rate, Shelley has moved down from her Mountain Dew.
We could use the term carbonated? Because that's what it is, right? I mean, it's carbonated water.
You just take your sciencey stuff and just keep it on that side of the studio, buddy.
Nobody questions fizzy.
That's what it says on the can.
It
says carbonated.
It says carbonated. Okay.
Yeah.
I'll have to go look up the term sparkling because now I've said it on the air, and I'm such a sophisticate, I have no idea what sparkling means. But at any rate, we're trying to move people away from those beverages. They have a lot of sugar. I have seen geographically there is a belt of very high soft drink consumption in the Appalachian Mountains, and that same area also has very high rates of diabetes. Doesn't prove causation, but if you consume a lot of sugar and you have problems controlling your sugar, you think that there may be some type of causation there. So while Rick is looking up sparkling,
I like this. They are carbonated sparkling soda and seltzer are all clear waters with effervescence.
There we go. It's an effervescent beverage.
Can I use
with
the term
no sugar?
Fizzy. I feel
the
like
bubbles
I'm
occur rude. Naturally, or be added with carbon dioxide.
Okay, gotcha. So at any rate, the theory is they don't make you feel full. Your body can absorb the fluid part of them very quickly, so you're left just with basically a pile of sugar in your stomach that you digest, and it shoots your sugar up, but it doesn't make you feel full. In fact, you want to go get a hamburger or cheeseburger to wash down with your Mountain Dew. So one, it doesn't make you feel full. It doesn't trigger anything. The other thing that make you feel full is high fat. Like ice cream makes you feel full. And we have learned that high carb diets, you have that problem. You just never really feel full. But again, drinks have no fat. They are high in carbs. They are low in volume. And they do not make you full. So you keep drinking them. And your sugar gets out of control, we believe. And so taxing these things makes perfect sense if you believe that the role of government should be to protect you from industry trying to get you hooked on these soft drinks. Now, if you think that government should stay out of your business, then taxing the soft drinks doesn't make any sense. Our problem is, on the backside, we all have to pay for diabetes care. And so we all have an interest in how healthy each other are. The less healthy we are, the more of our collective money, our insurance money, and our tax dollars we have to spend on taking care of each other. So I am not, in this case, a free marketeer. You can do whatever you want to, but unfortunately, I'm going to have to pay a higher insurance rate, and I don't like that. I would rather tax your beverage and try to keep you from doing that.
I mean, I hear what you're saying, Tony. I mean, it would be if you had, I mean, and believe me, we've talked about research where, you know, drinking a sweetened beverage for many, many, many years, you know, certainly probably can have a dramatic impact on both your weight, you know, which then impacts your health. I mean, so there is data that suggests this is a bad thing. It is just, it's the funny thing is, it's not a close enough link or connection to make you think, okay, well, that 20 cents or that 20% tax is going to pay for somebody's health care. So I don't have to. Right, so if I choose not to drink the sugary drink and you do, then you're paying you're basically paying your extra insurance premiums through that 20% increase.
Yeah, I see what you're saying.
I mean, and it does seem like that, but the link between the sugar sweetened drink and the poor health right now, again, it's they're distant relatives.
They are associated, but causality certainly has not been proven. The actual diabetes can be probably a combination of the antibiotics we take, changing the germs in our gut, the fact that our portion size is larger, the fact that we are more sedentary, the fact that we do drink a lot more sugar sweetened beverages than our parents did. All those things and many others work together to make us more likely to have diabetes.
But you know, ultimately, though, isn't the worry going to be that, okay, well, so now they've put that on, and I'm just going to say Coke, when are they going to put it on pie?
Right.
I mean, at what point is the next step going to be, okay, well, let's just look at sugar in general. If you make anything with sugar, when are we going to add 20% tax to it? And I think that's probably what has most people a little bit nervous about.
Yeah, this. Should industry be required to pay for the downstream effects? You know, right. Whether it's the environment or whether it's your beer belly.
It's an incredibly tough question.
Yep.
And it's far more complex than this show has the ability to deal with.
No, we just figured out how many times you should pee.
Well, I don't know that we did. I think there was some disagreement on how many.
A possibility. Yeah. My point is that this is not the most deeply philosophical show we've ever done.
I'm not sure we matched input with output on that topic. Because there are other ways that it can get out.
Now you got me confused. Yes, I need a diagram. I don't know.
No, that's something you don't want to draw, Tony.
You're not getting a diagram.
That is absolutely something you don't want to draw.
No diagrams.
Okay, fair enough.
You know, and I honestly, you know, a lot of times we like to give our opinions. I just don't know where I am on this one.
Yeah,
it's a slippery slope. It's a very slippery slope.
And how much authority are you willing to let the government have? On the other hand, how far are we going to go with our insurance costs, our health care costs, without trying something? I mean, it's not like we're in a great position here, let's face it. And so I'm willing to look at things like this. I understand your reluctance. And
it would almost feel better if it was on all drinks. It would almost feel better if it was across the board and it wasn't discriminating against the ones with sugar.
And here's me, who doesn't drink coffee, defending coffee. I mean, there's no way you could tax coffee. Coffee happens to be the healthiest drink humans can drink.
Yeah, but how much sugar does Starbucks put in almost every cup of coffee they make?
Not Starbucks. Starbucks
is not
coffee.
They've added lattes and mochas and...
That's not coffee.
Joe's and all kinds of
All right, let me go back and let me rephrase. Black coffee.
Then don't say Starbucks.
All right.
They don't even sell black. I mean, it's a special order item in Starbucks.
We'll have to send out for that one. It's on back order. All right. Let me wrap up this show with something. This sent me, I am not kidding you. I was sitting there. I downloaded this article. I worked it up for the show. And then I got up from my desk, and rather than really being well-versed in this article, I just went to the gym. This was very frustrating. April 17th, this was on Medscape, but they were talking about something published April 12th in something called Public Library of Science 1, PLOS-1. It's not the top-level peer-reviewed journal, but it gets information out very rapidly because it's an online journal. What they found, they surveyed middle-aged men. They figured out how much of their day they spent sitting, and then they did an MRI scan, and they looked at different parts of the brain. They found that sitting reduced the thickness of the important structures in the vein and the brain, the areas that are associated with cognition and memory. They shrink if you sit. David Merrill, who's assistant clinical professor at psychiatry at UCLA, he says sitting is the new smoking. Now, for those of us in Kentucky,
that's kind of harsh, isn't it?
Yes, smoking is the smoking. Sitting.
I mean, isn't marijuana the new smoking?
Vaping's the new smoking.
I think those two things. By the way, I invoked Weaver's first rule of pulmonology. Anything you set fire to and put in your mouth is going to hurt your lungs. But we don't know that sedentary behavior, that sitting, leads to dementia or early Alzheimer's disease, but it does apparently shrink your brain. 25 women, 10 men, each underwent partial MRI. They figured out how many hours a day they sit, and they correlated the two. And they found that again, sitting all day thins your brain out. Their preliminary findings, if they have a desk job that requires sitting in front of a computer for extended hours of time, setting a timer to go off every hour and get up and take a break. They said you couldn't really overcome this by going to the gym after you finish work. You can't sit all day and then go to the gym. Now,
isn't it that you can't go home and recline?
Well, the thing is you can't make it up in the evening hours. If you sit, something happens. And here's the thing. This is way, way overgeneralizing me. You know, Rick, two of our favorite guys, the guys that we really patterned this show after, were the Car Talk guys, Tom and Ray.
Yeah, click and clack.
Yeah, Yeah. And you know that Ray Maliazzi died of complications of Alzheimer's disease.
Right. You told me that once.
Yeah. And here's Carl Kasser, a lifelong radio personality, dies of complications of Alzheimer's disease. And that's two people that I really admire, who I felt were very intelligent people, died of complications of Alzheimer's disease.
Okay. Is that how you're going to end the show?
These are radio personalities. They sit a lot.
It was nice knowing you.
Yeah.
Next week, the standing show.
No, next week, I may forget exactly what we do here in the studio, but right now, I am worried about this. Meanwhile, we have run completely out of time. Get us off the air, Rick.
Special thanks to our Morehead State Public Radio producer, Brian Courtney, and to Eric Bilbrey, who wrote our Health Matters theme song, and to you, our loyal radio fans. Remember to show your support for Health Matters by visiting our digital empire. To listen to the show, go to WMKY.org, or visit us on Facebook. Just do a search for HM Radio Show.
For our radio crew and the supportive folks at the Northeast AHEC, thanks for listening to our show. And remember, these characteristics Health Matters shares with the new allergy medicine, Zizal.
Health Matters is the tiny little radio show that packs a punch. Health Matters may be small, but don't let its size fool you. It contains a powerful relief you need to say goodbye to allergy symptoms for a full 24 hours. And how does it compare to other allergy meds out there? Glad you asked.
Health Matters works twice as fast as Claritin. It lasts up to 6 times longer than Benadryl, so you can spend more time living and less time worrying about when to listen to your next radio show.
Health Matters provides full prescription strength relief that lasts up to 6 times longer than Benadryl and works twice as fast as Claritin. So listen to Health Matters tonight and take on anything tomorrow.
Over a 6-month clinical study, allergy sufferers who listened to Health Matters were less likely to doze off and were more alert during regular daily activities than those who heard a placebo radio show.
A 6-month clinical study saw improvements within key work categories when listening to Health Matters. Simply put, our listeners missed less time at work and school while experiencing a better day's productivity.
Whatever you do, do not take Health Matters lying down. Get out this week, make a healthy change in your life, and tune in next week for more exciting news from the world of medical research on Morehead State Public Radio.